Imagine earning continuing education credits while doing exactly what you're doing right now. Well, you can. Gable Media has revolutionized the way you earn your continuing education credits with a groundbreaking approach. Forget running around town and scouring the internet for credit-worthy courses. Fulfill your CE requirements effortlessly by listening to engaging podcasts just like the one you're listening to now. Our podcasts are designed to educate, entertain, and inspire, all in a user-friendly environment. But wait, there's more. Architects, Gable Media is also approved as an AIA Continuing Education Services provider. Upon completion, we handle everything, from reporting your hours directly to the AIA, to storing your certificates in your personal Gable Media profile for your self-reporting needs. So follow the link in the show notes and start earning your credits in the most innovative and entertaining way possible with Gable Media.
All right, Entree Architect community, welcome to the backstage area of Context and Clarity. Every Thursday afternoon on Context and Clarity Live, Catherine McPhail and I and our live audience talk with a special guest to search for clarity around the things that matter most to you, the architect, no matter what your context is. You may be the employee of a firm dreaming of doing your own thing, or maybe you've had a firm for a year or 10 years or 20 years, and you're starting to rethink or reimagine what that firm could or maybe even should be. Every week, we cover topics that fall under the broad umbrella of the business of architecture, and they're all the need-to-know topics for the success of architects just like you. If we've never met before, my name is Jeff Eccles, and what you're about to listen to is the audio recording of a conversation that my co-host, Catherine McPhail, and I had with a special guest. Or will it be guests from the Context and Clarity community? All of this to break down last week's Context and Clarity Live conversation. So thanks for joining us as we all share our biggest takeaways and look for ways to apply what we heard in the Context and Clarity Live conversation to our own businesses. Let's get into it. This episode of the Context and Clarity podcast is supported by Infratech. Bring indoor comfort to outdoor living with Infratech comfort heaters. Welcome to the backstage area of the Context and Clarity Studios. This week on Context and Clarity Live, Catherine McPhail and I talked to both Zach Waters and Stephen Litchfield. Zach's the founder and CEO of Black Swan Risk Management, a strategic risk management consulting firm based in the Bay Area of California. And Stephen is the founding partner of Litchfield Law, PC, in Newport Beach, California. But we wanted to know what our audience thought about the conversation with Zach and Steve. So we've invited Kenneth Crutcher back to join us on the backstage. Ken is an architect, an educator, and the founder of Crutcher Studio in the Detroit, Michigan area. So Ken, welcome backstage.
Oh, thank you for having me back.
It's great to have you back. We talked to Zach and Steve. This is Zach's second appearance on Context and Clarity Live, so he's the first now to be a repeat. Mm-hmm. One thing I have been very conscious of all week is that when we had Zach the first time, we spent a week talking about risk management. Now we've got a second week talking about risk management. And a lot of people said, hey, this is stressing me out, all this talk about risk management. So we brought Zach and Steve on so we could get the perspective of insurance and attorney, basically. Both sides of the spectrum, or both ends of the spectrum, I guess. What did we learn? Ken, what's a big takeaway for you from this whole thing?
Oh, gosh. I guess liability is something else. There's got to be something else we should be doing. I was thinking, washing cars, is there less liability with that, maybe?
Yeah, I was thinking about alternate careers as well, again.
A lot of the things they were talking about are things I've been running across or been crossing my mind in some of the work I've been doing, working with some of the clients. And I know we talk about the risk management with this, but maybe what we really should be talking more about is risk mitigation, because there's going to be some risk. It's just how do we just try to minimize it?
Yeah, I think that's a really great point. And I guess for a rundown of the topics that we've talked about this week, we started out the week talking about client selection and risk management, or maybe that, you know, that's a big part of mitigating risk. And then we talked about means and methods and then insurance. But I think, you know, when I guess it was Zach was talking about the level of sophistication of clients and, you know, and understanding who your clients are and expectations and things like that, that seems to really be getting hammered home this week and in this conversation, you know, whether your client's a contractor or a future homeowner or whoever they are.
I think that's a big concern for me, for us, like as a small practice folks. Mm-hmm. A lot of, actually, I would say most of my projects are one-offs. It's a client doing this for the first time and first and only time. So the idea of having my insurance rates be higher because I'm not having a repeat client, or somehow that my practice is not, I guess, as good as it could be because I don't have repeat clients. Well, income, if my market is just folks to do one thing one time, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, me too.
What are you supposed to do?
But then he said, you know, when I asked him about working for contractors as repeat clients, I kind of blanked out because my head rush was too much, so I couldn't really hear him. But anyway, he said, I think I wrote, that can go sideways very quickly, what he said.
Yes. So. Yeah.
Anyway, so then how we can't really have repeat clients in the same way that it, like commercial architects could or hospitality architects could, right? Residential architects probably don't have that many repeat clients.
Yeah. Well, I think it, maybe Steve said it, but they were talking about the relationship and, you know, knowing each other and the expectations and, you know, communication. And I think, you know, maybe if there's any solace in the whole thing is, you know, if you work for the same contractor a lot and you know each other really well and you know the expectations really well, that might be best case scenario in that type of that type of arrangement.
Yeah, I just happen to be in the other kind of arrangement right now that I'm trying. But I'm pretty sure it doesn't fall into the four S's for me to talk about it on a podcast. So,
what are the four S's? What are the four S's?
Oh, what are the four S's? Okay, sending, seeing, saving, and signing.
Yeah.
Not in that order. That wasn't the right order. It was signing, seeing, sending, and saving.
Sending and saving. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love that. I mean, I think it sums it up really well. Obviously, that's why he put it together that way. But that's a good little tool. That's a good tool. There was there were a couple questions there at the end, and I always feel bad. We get into these conversations like this could, I was joking, but this really could go a long time. This could be long conversations, not just an hour. And there were some questions at the end that we really didn't get to and didn't address about construction administration.
Yeah, when he said that, I was wondering, well, can you elaborate? Could you tell us how we're supposed to, or how we increase our liability through incorrect construction administration
or not doing construction administration?
Yeah, I don't know what he meant. I saw Sarah Lee was kind of curious as well.
Yeah so he mentioned a younger person, right? A younger team member that is,
you could be old and clueless, I'm feeling.
Well, that's I think that's a good point. Maybe we just call it a clueless person.
Yeah, just clueless.
Yeah.
Oh, I just feel like, am I I mean, I'm not young. If I've been doing this like 25-6 years, then maybe I know what I'm doing, but then I listen to these conversations and makes me worry because you don't know what you don't know.
Yeah, but I think on the flip side, though, you need to be doing construction administration, don't you?
Do
both of you do?
I try to do it.
I try to do it, but I've got clients that don't want to be bothered. They don't want me to be around until there's a problem. Course, but
yes, until there's a problem,
the thing, right? Yeah.
And you got that client you haven't talked to in 3 months calling, and it's not just to say hi.
Yeah.
In your state, so Ken, you're in Michigan, and Catherine, you're in Massachusetts. In here in Indiana,
And this only applies to basically commercial projects. It wouldn't apply to a residential project. But in the state of Indiana, unless something has changed that I'm not aware of, someone has to provide construction administration. Someone is signing off on the form at the state level for the construction design release that's going to be, I forget what the term is, what they call that person, the design professional that's observing the construction or whatever it is. The
design professional and responsible charge.
There you go. is that the same in your states?
I don't know if it's the same. I've literally never run across, I've seen the term and I've seen it in the building code that there is a designer and responsible charge who's supposed to review any shop drawings or submittals, anything for the building department before they do their reviews or as part of the permitting and occupancy process. I've never run across it until literally just recently on a project I'm doing in Battle Creek with a building inspector for plan review. They wanted a letter from the owner saying, hey, you've got an architect that's the designer and responsible charge, and to sign off to say, hey, you got to listen to what he says.
Yeah.
And right.
Yeah, that's
interesting. But I've never run across that and had projects go through with no CA at the owner's request. We didn't do any CA, and they completed the project, closed it out, and I never even got called to the grand opening.
Yeah, I know. Me neither. You don't get called to the grand opening after you don't see them for a year. Yeah. I work on existing buildings and usually not very large projects. I mean, they're just single family mostly. So I haven't run into that having to sign off on it.
Yeah. Here, like I said, here in Indiana, it would have to be going through the state, which means it's a class A, it's a commercial building that's going through, and you actually, someone has to sign the form, right? And there's always been an objection in the terminology because you want to say observation, but it says something that your AIA contract document doesn't want you to say. I don't remember if it actually says inspecting or, but there's been argument about that for decades. But I digress. Catherine, what was your, I know there's a lot of things that stress you out about that conversation. What's your biggest takeaway from Zach and Steve part two, or Zach part two and Steve?
Okay. So I don't know if this is a takeaway officially. My thought after is that we could have them back again in 2 months and still have plenty to ask them.
Yeah.
You know, like you were saying, like we could still have 5 hours on this topic, and that people have so many questions. And I was surprised on Clubhouse this morning. I think only Amy Baker and I said that we have attorneys who specialize in working with architects. Mm-hmm. I'm just surprised there aren't more. So yeah, I wonder how much people deal with their...
Maybe we should be glad that there aren't more.
Maybe. That's the question.
I feel like I'm jinxing it all the time. If I even talk about it, it makes me nervous.
Yeah. Well, that's why I asked that question at the end about, you know, do you need a team? And I thought Zach's answer was a pretty good one. He said, maybe you don't, but, you know, in my experience, it's been a long time since I've worked in an architecture firm now, I guess seven years or so. But we always had really good insurance agents, insurance brokers that helped us. You know, they reviewed contracts and you know, the things that good insurance agents do. And we had an attorney as well that specialized in the AEC world that represented us. I don't know. It does surprise me that more people don't, but it also surprises me when people say, hey, I don't carry insurance.
Yeah. Well, that's true. That is surprising. Mm-hmm. I those people should have more of a light head than I do. 'Cause at least I have that, but you know, I was interested to hear that there's an uptick in the residential litigation lately. Uh-huh. Also, what he said about the having to redesign for free, that whole thing is interesting.
Yes, that one surprised me. And it took me a minute to figure out what he was actually talking about, but it sounds like, and it was Zach that was talking about that, right? To me, it sounds like somebody actually has in their contract that if there's a gap of 5% or more, as mm-hmm. in it's the cost of construction comes in 5% over budget or whatever it is, they're going to redesign for free. I just sat there. I may be completely naive, but I'm thinking, why in the world would you put that in your contract?
That was my thought as well. Man, I thought that too, actually.
Yeah, but I mean, I guess there are some projects where the budget and not going over budget is the most important thing to the client. So I guess they would have that in there, but that would be tough because prices are going up so quickly.
Yeah, there's actually someone in my mastermind group that they brought this up in our meeting last week, our mastermind meeting last week, where they have a client and they do large, beautiful, large residential, you know, single family homes. And, you know, the budget was X. The contractor or contractors that the architect recommended all were within an acceptable range of X. The client wanted to use a different contractor, and that contractor came in at far above X. Math off the top of my head was maybe 50% above mm-hmm. X. The client, of course, was upset. You know, this is the contractor they want to use. It came in 50% higher than the others or whatever the actual number was. And then turned around and requested a refund of the architect's fees, which to that point had totaled $100,000.
What? Wow.
And so
how do you justify or even ask that? You're basically saying, I know you've done all this work and I paid you for it, but now I want my money back.
Yeah, I don't.
I had a similar thing like that too, where I had two contractors who could do the project for roughly what their budget was, but they wanted to use this other one that was $150,000 more in a, you know, it was like 208 versus 370. Mm-hmm. And so, but I have two people who can do it over here, but they didn't want to use them. Yeah. They wanted these other people, which is not part of, but anyway, it was $100,000 fee and they had to give the whole thing back.
Well, I don't know what the resolution is yet, but the attorney did advise to basically offer something, but nothing close to the full fee.
What a bummer. That must have been a lot of work. Taking up a long time.
I guess I'd have to see more detail why that even it came to that being the question or being a possible resolution. You know, you've done the design work and, you know, why on earth did you ever get the fee back?
Yeah, I don't. I had, you know, in my past life, in my past firm life, I had a client that I think it was a different. I mean, it wasn't $100,000 fee to begin with, but it's maybe a slightly different circumstance. They decided not to go forward with the project, and then said, well, since we can't use your drawing, so they had basically reduced it all down to quote unquote drawings, right? Then we don't think we should have to pay you for those drawings.
Well, that's different. I mean, I've had that happen with a client. I took an initial payment to get started, and they decided they weren't going to do the project before we had our first meeting. My daughter's dog here is fucking wants to join.
I'm glad to hear that's your dog, Ken.
Yes. No, Nala, go away. But he wanted to stop the project before, and right as we started, I think I may have started a couple sketches, and then, you know, he wanted me to return his money, and I said no, and the next thing I know, he's taking me to court.
Yeah.
And I didn't know what to do with that, but I was really early in my career. We had just started doing stuff, and I didn't know what to do. So, mm-hmm.
What'd you do?
Well, I gave him his money back. I mean, I was like, oh, didn't really read my contract thoroughly, but after reading it, it's like, now I make sure I have the statement in it that initial payment is not a retainer, but an initial payment and minimum payment for services. So you make that payment. If you want to stop work, fine. Bye. Have a good life. And that minimum payment is just the minimum payment, not a retainer for service. And I think it was stated it was retainer. It would be credited towards the first invoice. Well, we never invoiced, so he's asking for his money back.
Right. That kind of makes sense.
Yeah.
So I've changed that. And the wording of the AIA contract actually has it in there too now. It says minimum payment for services, not just a retainer.
Huh. Well, yeah, I've given fee. I've returned fee before, you know, because they stop work or because I feel like I want it to go away, whatever the conflict is. So then I just offer to give them back a certain amount of money.
Yeah, I think that was the attorney's advice to the person in my mastermind group. You know, it's sort of a peace offering or whatever.
In the last few years, premium outdoor spaces have become a must-have architectural feature, and Infratech outdoor electric heating systems have become the brand of choice among leading architects. Infratech heaters provide energy-efficient, ambient warmth that allows homeowners to live outdoors during the cooler months. Clients love them because they can enjoy up to 100 more nights a year outside. Architects love them because of their unparalleled versatility, from heater capacities and colors to mounting options that can either seamlessly disappear or accentuate a space with beautiful decorative coverings. They're also the only comfort heat company to offer smart home integration and hands-free voice-activated control. For over 60 years, Infratech has made their products in the United States at competitive prices. They offer incredible design and live technical support at every stage of the job. Infratech is specified at the world's most prestigious properties. Learn why and sign up for a free consultation at infratech-usa.com/podcast. You know, where I live in Indianapolis, fall is a beautiful time of year. Right now, the leaves are orange and yellow, and there's a wonderful Christmas in the air. But let's be honest, as beautiful as it is, sitting on the porch and shivering as I watch the neighborhood go by starts to lose its appeal. I guess it's time to consider an Infratech heating system so that I can sit outside at least until all of the leaves have fallen.
But, you know, I think it sort of comes full circle in a way to that client selection process.
Right. I was just thinking about that.
Setting expectations up front.
Yeah. Right. When he was talking about that, I wish he'd elaborated a little bit more on that. Because what can we do to... When he was talking about a sophisticated client, does that mean that we don't necessarily want to work with people who are sophisticated, or we do? Like you were saying, Ken, it's just the person who's done it, never done it before, not going to do it again. So would they be less likely to sue you than a developer or an attorney?
Yeah, I think that's why I think the catch is a kind of a catch 22, because like I say, you want to work with the nice people to help them with their project, but they've never done this before. So they are not the sophisticated client that you're going to get a credit on your insurance for working with.
Yeah.
And they are more than likely going to be a problem client, but it's more likely something is going to come up that's they're not familiar with just because they've never done a construction project before, never hired an architect before. Mm-hmm. And there's a learning curve for them. And it does get tired for us because we're going through that same learning curve over and over and over. Mm-hmm. We're watching it happen.
Sometimes I forget about that learning curve until it's a little bit too late.
Yeah, somebody told me long ago, I don't remember who it was or where it was, but you know, ultimately it's about setting and meeting expectations. Yeah. And I think, you know, listening to this conversation today and, you know, all the conversations we've had about risk management, all week, I think that's, you know, whoever it is that's out there that said that, thank you, because I think that's really it, right? If whether they're a sophisticated client or not, if they have a certain expectation, and we do have an opportunity to try to influence that expectation, especially early on, like Tim Dearborn made that comment during the Context and Clarity Live today about communication and conversations. But if we allow that expectation to be set and then we don't meet it, that's where it starts to crumble. And I think, unfortunately, now one of the most common tools in somebody's toolbox is to say, I'll sue you. That's kind of a scary prospect.
The challenge I see and run into is that the expectations are set before we've had the first meeting.
That's true.
You know, coming, you know, with an HGTV world out there, that they have expectations of what they think an architect is supposed to do and what the services are supposed to be. And they've already talked to, you know, this contractor and that contractor and their cousin or friend who's done it before, and this is the way they did it. And so now everything that I'm trying to tell them in terms of managing expectations doesn't make any sense because it contradicts everything else they've heard before. Now how do you mitigate? How do you manage that?
Yeah, I think that is a reality. That HGTV effect or whatever, yeah, whatever we want to call it. Catherine, well, I think go ahead, Ken.
It's not just, I mean, it's more than HGTV. I mean, it's also the expectations of the clients or people. They know other people who've done work. And I know I have a project right now where it's more a case of what somebody else got away with. And now we're trying to get away with the same thing. And it's like, well, you shouldn't have got away with it over there. And we're definitely not going to get away with it over here. So we, you know, why are we trying to push this issue?
Yeah, that's a really good point. Catherine, you had your hand up a minute ago.
Yeah, I did, because and Sarah, you're going to have to cut this part out. But are we recording right now?
Yes.
Are you recording? Okay, good. Because on my thing, it says recording paused. So
I'm recording. It says recording here.
Okay, that's good. Because it must be just that when I came on, it was recording. Anyway, it's fine.
Yeah, it's the little red thing is flashing, so I assume we are.
Okay. Okay.
Okay. Good. That's...
Okay, so you can start up again, Sarah.
Well, before you start up, Sarah, I was for class the other night. We had James Petty, who's the architect and developer guy, talk to our class. And I got to the end and I couldn't remember. I had this sick feeling that I had forgotten to record it. I was like,
oh no,
God.
Did you forget?
I did not forget. So
That's good.
Yeah, that's a good thing.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, Sarah, we're coming back now.
Okay. Phew. Well, I don't know. I mean, obviously, there is a market for this information. So, I mean, architects, for all of this risk management and risk mitigation.
Oh, sure.
You know, I feel like we all want to make sure we're doing the right thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You said a minute ago, Catherine, you said a minute ago that, you know, we could bring them back in 2 months or whatever the time frame was. And I think that's exactly right. You know, and same with Patty Harris that we had a few weeks ago. She's talking about licensure and all of that. There's so much to unpack there. I don't even know. I mean, I guess the other side of that is, you know, sort of the same as being an architect. You guys have spent your entire careers learning what you know and practicing what you know and developing your experience and expertise. So has Patty, so has Steve, so has Zach, and trying to pull all of that out of them in 1 hour conversations is not reasonable. So maybe the big takeaway is to find good people like them to help you. I guess maybe that's the elephant in the room.
Yeah. Well, I mean, everybody talks about building the team, right? That's all really what you have to do. And then
it's a good point.
You don't have to have all their knowledge. You just have to have them there to help.
Yeah. That's
or just for being an employee and don't start your own firm.
That is another option. Or like you said, go work at a car wash or whatever other job.
I'm leaning towards coffee shop.
Yeah.
Get my espresso. Yeah, or all three, I guess, right? Be an employee, go work somewhere else. Switch careers, I guess.
Yeah.
Both valid options.
Mm-hmm.
hate to be that negative about it, but
no, it's just a scary topic because who wants to think that everything that you, you know, it's like basically it comes down to our homes, really. I think a lot of people are worried about losing their homes. And so whether that's founded, it's any based in any kind of reality, I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. And Steve's comment at the beginning or close to the beginning about that, hopefully that puts some people at ease. Is that it usually doesn't go beyond and make sure you have the clauses in your contract that limit your liability to the cover to your level of your insurance coverage to protect yourself in that way. But but yeah it is a scary topic, but I think at the same time and to those people that during this week and in other threads in the Entree Architect community Facebook group, it's have said that they don't carry insurance. And here's the reasons why. Hopefully the average, the number of people in our community that actually have been sued, is relatively low.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully.
Well, I think part of it is the, when you look at the level of fees for a lot of smaller projects, the mm-hmm. cost of litigation and cost of recovery doesn't justify the money that's there or money in what's a dispute. I know I've had disputes go the other way where I'm trying to recover money from some clients or, you know, get the final payment or get payment. And it's like, you know, what they owe me is less than half what's going to cost me to get an attorney to get it in the first place. So, you know, why go after it? So I guess I see the folks who, and I did this for years. I didn't have insurance for years either. Well, it was like, you know, deep pockets. That's what the litigious world goes after. So if you don't have insurance, insurance companies don't want you to hear this, but if you don't have insurance, nobody's going to sue you because what are they going to get?
Yeah, that is exactly the reasoning of everybody that has commented in that way. And I mean, I think it's founded, right? It has a basis there.
If you have a house or anything else, couldn't they get that? I mean, if you have that.
Well, I mean, if it's worth getting, if it's something that's worth getting. I mean, you know, it's assuming that you're trying to settle, you know, if the settlement amount is, you know, someone's house is probably in the hundreds of thousands of dollars. So if that's the settlement, that's a different thing. And maybe you should be carrying insurance. But if you're renting an apartment and your car is 10 years old and,
yeah, that's true. I guess I should just get a little bit poorer. Just a little bit poorer.
Yeah. Well, they're only going to sue the rich architects.
Yes. I mean, I think there's some truth to that. That if you don't have, like say, if you have people are concerned about losing their house. Well, if you don't have a house in the first place, you're probably not going to get sued.
I guess I will console myself with that if I lose my house. But now I can't, you know, now there's nothing left to give. So.
Well, you know, we have not talked about it in exactly this way before. Maybe we need to get a guest to, you know, we talked with Patty a few weeks ago about business entities for your firms, but maybe we need to get a CPA or somebody to come and talk about setting up umbrella, basically holding companies that's your personal LLC, because that's... Mm-hmm. That's possible. I've been studying that recently, because then you could literally or legally not have a house. You know, the holding company has the house. So maybe that's another conversation for risk mitigation as maybe. Well.
That gets a little fuzzy because, you know, a lot of us are in partnerships with, you know, spouses.
Right.
Then what? You know, it's like a lot of moving parts that just like, we should talk about that, because I think a lot of people want to know that as well. So,
One last thing that came to my mind, and I think John Jones commented during the conversation today about some clauses that don't hold up in court. And I seem to remember, we would always put in our contracts that the I forget how the exact wording goes, but basically my liability is limited to the amount of my contract. Right. So if my architecture fee is $100,000, my liability ends at $100,000. I think I've heard that that may not be enforceable. Do either of you know about that? It's not enforceable.
I have a friend who does that. So she doesn't carry insurance. She just says that's a limit of my liability. And I asked my attorney about that. And he said, that's not a good idea. So I figure for however much I pay, you know, I don't pay that much in insurance. It's probably, you know, under $10,000 a year in liability insurance compared to my health insurance, which is $3,300 a month. Yeah, it's all just, you know, relative, I suppose. But anyway, I'd rather pay the insurance, and I'm just the type of person who can't sleep at night if I start worrying about these kinds of things, so...
I think that's really probably the bigger issue, is bigger problem. It's not so much how much they're going to take. It's just having to go through the process of the taking.
Yes.
Yeah, the process of the taking is the thing I dread. Yeah, yes. It's not the taking. Oh, well, can we end on a happy note? Is there any happy note? The happy note is that there are people like this that you can have on your team that can be there for you. So you're not alone.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. I mean, it's I've said this several times this week. I haven't been in practice for 7 years, but you know, remembering back to the insurance agents that we used and the attorney that we used, and they were great partners and great resources. And I just encourage. Whether you called Zach or, you know, somebody else, there are a couple of people that brought up that they didn't have very good agents, or in a period of time they didn't have very good agents or whatever. Easy to say, I guess, but I would look for that good agent, because, I mean, just think about what all the knowledge that these two guys shared with us tonight and what that could help you avoid. So yeah, I would say that's a positive note.
Yeah.
I'm surprised that they don't reach out more to communities like this, because I had a time trying to find an agent. I'm asking around people and just trying to find an insurance agent chose to get insurance. It was a challenge just trying to find somebody.
That
weren't they knocking on our door, this, you know, reaching out to every graduate architect or every AIA member or something?
That's a good idea. Going right to the schools, get people on their way out.
Yeah, you would think. You would think. I mean, sometimes, you know, you'll find them as sponsors of your local AIA or, you know, whatever. But honestly, I'm with you there, because it was yesterday we talked about insurance and risk management, and there was more than one person saying, "Hey, where do I find a good agent? Because I'm struggling with that." So, I guess that makes me thankful that Zach and Steve are part of the community. They're over in the Architects and Allies Facebook group, the Entree Architects and Allies group. Mm. So they're. You know, they're in this community, which is fantastic, and thank you to them for being that. But you would think that they might like sponsor graduation or something.
Yeah. I mean, even just saying, "Hey, I'm out here," you know, give me a call, because like I said, the biggest question I had was, okay, everybody's saying you got to get insurance, and yeah, I've got a great agent, and this, but like, well, what is the first question they ask? And when you call, what is it that they're going to, what do you have to provide them? What kind of information is in the application form? Or, you know, that was all never shared with me until I actually got to talk to someone about getting a policy.
Yeah.
Yeah. I switched from the person I was using, and I ended up getting something off the internet, which always seems a little suspicious. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But yeah, that's what I'm supposed to send to Zach to have him look over.
Yep.
But, well,
he mentioned that there towards the end of the conversation, you know, is a team like Zach and Steve right for everybody? No. I mean, you know, you've got to kind of weigh those. You know, And I think he based it on how much liability you actually have.
Well, I wish I knew how much I have, because I keep thinking, here's a big question I have. What could possibly go wrong? Okay, I'm sorry I said that. I'm going to knock on wood now.
You're about to find out, right?
Yeah, I know. Oh, no. I've done
Murphy's
it now.
Knocking on your door.
That's one of the big takeaways from him, that he was saying that team you need to have. If you've got large projects, you've got large receivables, there's a lot of liability. And it's more financial liability hanging out there than, you want to have that kind of team. But, if you're doing house additions and porch renovations, your liability probably isn't that much. The resolution of those kind of issues is going to be, like, say, either you're writing a small check, or you're just saying, sorry, you got to find somebody else to finish it or something. It's not, it's not multi-million dollar litigation going on.
Yeah.
Well, I guess the good news is that the insurance is out there, and fortunately or unfortunately, it probably costs less than your health insurance.
Yeah.
Oh, it does. So, for me, it does. It's about like a tenth of my health insurance.
Yeah, it is more than my car insurance, though. That's
Yeah, that's right. It's between car insurance and health insurance.
Yeah.
Well, Ken, thanks a lot for joining us here backstage. It's great to hear your takeaways from this conversation. How you're going to apply some of this that we learned in the conversation with Zach and Steve today. And Catherine, as always, thanks for co-hosting all of this with me. And for everybody that's out there listening to this, thanks for listening. Hopefully this helps you in some way. You've learned something from this. I said this at the end of the live conversation. I know, we stacked up 2 weeks, not in a row, but we stacked up 2 weeks of risk management, and more than one person has expressed how stressful it's been to think about and talk about risk management for 2 weeks. But hopefully this was an opportunity to mitigate some of that stress, because you got some answers. I would encourage you to reach out to Zach, to Steve, to people like them. I don't have any great advice off the top of my head of how to find people like that where you are, wherever that is. But that's the encouragement. There is help out there. So thank you again for listening in. We'll be back at it again next week. Next week on Context and Clarity Live, we will have Michael Gerber, who is the author of E-Myth, the whole suite of E-Myth books. You've probably heard of him. So if the podcast is your thing, keep your ears out for our Context and Clarity Live with Michael Gerber. And thanks again for joining us here for this backstage. And take care of yourself. Be well, be safe. Take a little bit of time to breathe and relax and rejuvenate. It's a wacky world out there. So take care of yourself. And I hope that I'll see you somewhere sometime soon. Thanks, everybody.
I want to say thank you to Infratech Outdoor Comfort Heating for their support of this episode of the Context and Clarity podcast. Visit infratechusa.com/podcast to sign up for a free consultation and learn why Infratech is the choice for bringing indoor comfort to outdoor living. All right, well, now you know what we thought and what we're going to do with what we learned. But what did you think? What did we miss? I really hope that there was some big takeaway from the Context and Clarity Live conversation or from our breakdown right here that will help you with your business. DM me on Instagram or on Twitter and let me know what your takeaways were. You can find me on all the socials at Jeff_Eccles. So send me a message and let me know what your takeaway was. And if you want more conversations like this, subscribe to the Context and Clarity podcast and leave us an honest review and rating. Those things really help us to get the message out and help us to help more architects just like you. Oh, and follow Context and Clarity on Instagram as well. There you can get a heads up on everything that's coming up. In our next episode, Catherine and I will host Context and Clarity Live again. with a new special guest and a new theme for next week. There's always something new to look forward to. And if you love content like this, check out Gable Media. It's a multimedia network for people that care about the built environment. And it's also the home of Context and Clarity. With Gable's growing family of podcasts and video channels, I know you'll find something there that interests you. You can learn more at GableMedia.com. That's GABLMedia.com. And finally, if the topic of today's episode is of particular interest to you and you'd like to dig deeper into it, then join me over in the Entree Architect Community Facebook group. That's where every weekday at 4 p.m. Eastern, I host Context and Clarity conversations, and we take topics just like this and we dig deeper. We have a conversation in real time to try to find more clarity around the things that matter most to you. So thanks for listening. I hope our time together has inspired you to think about your community and your practice and how you can support those around you. Catherine and I will be back for our next episode. And in the meantime, I hope you'll join me and the Entree Architect community on Facebook today at 4 p.m. Eastern so that we can help each other find more clarity around the topics that matter most, no matter what your context may be.
From historic homes to modern architecture, brick is one of the most popular building materials around the world.
How to allow the house to bridge the gap between the history of the site, the approachability of this kind of architecture in this kind of neighborhood, and the sort of nostalgia of materiality for the client's past, right? And brick really started to provide an answer for that.
Hi, I'm Doug Pat, and this is Design Vault. There aren't many materials that easily blend with any style and context, but brick does just that. I've seen some extraordinary work with brick, so when Glengarry approached me about hosting this podcast, I couldn't say no.
Typically, Tudor-style houses from outside are just stunningly gorgeous piece of structure. And when you go in, it's just sad.
Yeah.
Dark. And that is not going to happen with my approach to design.
I speak with industry leaders and share inspiring stories behind their work and ingenious design.
You'll see brick that's fashioned into basket weave patterns, sawtooth patterns. What's known in England as diapering.
Doesn't sound like you knew them per se, right? They found you through relationships that you had with other.
Well, wait, Doug, there's more.
Okay.
We'll go behind the scenes to understand process and even the inspiration that sparked the design.
You know, I think we were inspired by all the factory buildings in Dumbo. I mean, that is the kind of period of significance, that early American factory building.
Design Vault by Glengarry. Visit glengarry.com/design-vault or search for Design Vault wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe now to stretch your imagination.